Hey, y'all. Scott here. Here's how to support the show. Patreon.com/Scott Horton Show if you want to donate per interview. And also scotthorton.org/donate. Anyone who donates $20 gets a copy of the audiobook of Fool's Errand. Anyone who donates $50, that'll get you a signed copy of the paperback in the mail there. And anyone who donates $100 gets either a QR code commodity disc or a lifetime subscription, not only for $100, not two, a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think audiobooks, libertarian audiobooks, listenandthink.com there. So check out all that stuff. And of course, we take all your different digital currencies, especially Zencash and all the different kinds of Bitcoins and whatevers are all there at scotthorton.org/donate. And get the book, Fool's Errand. And give it a good review on Amazon if you read it and you liked it, and review the show on iTunes and Stitcher and that kind of thing if you want. All right, thanks.
Sorry I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Well, it's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
But we ain't killing their army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, Ben, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
Aren't you guys introducing Nadine Dehaene? She wrote this, first of all, she's a journalist based in Britain, and she's written this important article for Middle East Eye. Haftar forces launch fresh attack on besieged Libyan city of Derna. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing real good. I really appreciate you joining us on the show today. And
my pleasure.
And especially because I'm so far behind in covering events in Libya right now. And so I really appreciate you helping me out in that way to catch up here. Mm-hmm. And so this is about the war in the eastern half of the country. And so, this guy, Khalifa Haftar, now he's a guy who, you know, I think McClatchy newspapers made it pretty clear that he was a CIA asset, was living just outside of Langley, Virginia for 30 years or something, waiting for his day, or 25 years or no, I think 30, waiting for his day to come back. And they parachuted him in there. But I don't know if he still works for the Americans or not. I guess they've tried to say that he doesn't work for the Americans. And I guess I think the U.S. is behind this UN-backed government of national unity that they're trying to create. So I don't know if he's really in defiance of their wishes at this point or what, or if you can help us with that. Yeah. But anyway.
Well, I mean, so first of all, we have the UN-backed government, which is supposed to be sort of a unity government that brought together sort of all factions in the country that were vying for control, to bring them together and have one unified government. But that didn't quite work. And so what we have now is the Government of National Accord, which is the UN-backed government in the capital in the west, Tripoli. But also in the east of the country, we have the House of Representatives, which backs Haftar, and which is sort of like almost the other side of the coin, and they're not working together. They haven't come together. And so what we have now is sort of two or three separate governments in the country, and no security. So Haftar's in control of the majority of the east, and Derna is the last stronghold that, of opposition there.
So this really puts the U.S. and France at opposite purposes here, or they're trying to figure out a way to merge the national unity or the government of national accord and the Haftar factions together at some point?
Yeah, I mean, the international community has generally supported the government of National Accord and supported unity and supported a unity government, a so-called unity government. But in fact, like as you mentioned correctly, we have countries like France, countries like Russia, Egypt, the UAE, that are backing Haftar, that are saying that sort of no solution in Libya can be achieved without Haftar being in the picture, which in itself, I suppose, is problematic, because Haftar has not only been accused of war crimes by human rights groups and has sort of been at the forefront of lots of suffering of civilians, lots of destruction in the east of the country, but he isn't actually interested in backing this unity government. I'm not saying in any way, shape or form that the unity government is actually faultless, because it isn't, but at the same time I think the international community is a little bit confused, doesn't really know what it's doing, and the people suffering are the civilians on the ground.
Well, it doesn't sound like this government of national unity has much unity behind it at all, right? This is the...
No. Yeah.
At one point, I mean, I remember when they announced it, the entire thing existed on a ship offshore because they couldn't even come into Tripoli.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but then, so... And I'm sorry, because I really want to talk about Derna too, but just how vast is the political divide between Tripoli and Benghazi here? Will there ever be a Libya again, or we're just going to have the country split into three official states?
This famous three-way split map that was once drawn out on a napkin. I mean, I think the idea is, and actually for the majority of Libyans, they do want a united Libya. And it's actually quite interesting to think about that in sort of the context of what is happening in Derna at the moment, because Derna is the only place in the east that Haftar doesn't have control over yet. Should he have control, should he take over control, then the whole of the east could essentially become his territory. But I mean, it remains quite unclear as to what's going to happen next, but I wouldn't rush to come to the conclusion that the country will be split. I think Libyans do want a united Libya, and I think it's going to take a lot more to convince people that splitting the country is in any way a solution.
Well, but the status quo, right, is that you got basically two governments and one trying to be a government. Never mind the South for a minute, but just in terms of East and West and the US-UN government here. And nobody wants to give up enough power and share it with each other enough to have a unified government over the country, right?
Yeah, but I mean, that's very true. But I mean, what we have to remember about Libya, which is a little bit different to a lot of other places, is that everyone is armed. I mean, every sort of area in the country has militias, has, armed groups running municipalities, armed groups running. We even have, militias running the airport in Tripoli. We have... And it's not as simple as sort of someone decides and all else falls into place, because you do have a population that is almost, 90% of which is armed, and it's not as simple as people are sort of trying to paint it. And I'd like to go back a second to the Government of National Accord. You have a government that's not able to even do the simplest of things, such as control its own airport. So we have in Tripoli, the only civilian airport left is actually being run by militias, a militia that has a prison on site, that has again been accused by the UN itself of treating prisoners that are being held in that prison unfairly, and so you have a government that is a government without control, and that has to sort of appease militias and armed groups because they don't have the firepower essentially to counter what the militias do have. Mm-hmm. So it's very complicated, and I don't think it's as quite as simple as sort of, you know, the international community decides and Libya sort of becomes whatever they want it to be, purely because of how much firepower everyone has. And right. that's sort of part of the problem that the GNA faced when they had to be situated on this boat, because they couldn't ensure the security of the government due to all of the arms and things everywhere. So mm-hmm. it's quite a muddled picture.
Okay, so now let's talk about this great article here. Again, it's Middle East Eye. Haftar forces launch fresh attack on besieged Libyan city of Derna. And this is a town on the coast in the east of the country. And I think you say in here it's a town of, 150,000 people?
Something like that, yes.
And it's the last place in the east that is not under the control of Haftar's forces, you said.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And so tell us about the fighting going on in the city now.
Well, I mean, you know, those residents of Derna are not, you know, this type of attack is actually not something new to them. I think it's important with Derna to start sort of from the beginning, because there's a lot of discourse around Derna and why it's important that Haftar and his so-called Libyan National Army take it over again. But it's, I think it's important to start from the very beginning. Derna had a massive problem with the so-called Islamic State group. So Derna had Islamic State fighters in the city. They suffered a lot of destruction and sort of, you know, death and all the rest of it that comes with that. And Derna came together, fighters within Derna, soldiers within Derna came together and freed the city from Islamic State. And actually when Islamic State fighters then left Derna, and it was the same sort of fighters that then eventually made their way to Sirte, further west of the country. And so what happened then was, once they freed Derna from the sort of stronghold of IS, they set up defense force, which was made up of the forces that were involved in fighting IS at the time. And Haftar, who is the leader of the so-called Libyan National Army, then decided that, you know, now we have to go into Derna and free Derna from terrorism. And actually it's quite common, and we see it quite a lot, that Haftar labels any of his opposition as terrorists. It's quite an interesting securitization tactic that he's used quite well, I would say, to get both international community and local community on his side.
And you're saying these are the people who defeated the Islamic State and drove them out?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you have the Derna Shura Council, which was, you know, it's disbanded now, and it's under sort of the Derna Defense Forces now. But yeah, they were actual locals who were fighting against Islamic State. They weren't, you know, it was not the Libyan National Army that had any involvement in that. It was not any, so they didn't have any outside help. And actually, even now, residents in the city say, you know, our own sons sort of thing were responsible for getting rid of these terrorists from our city. And now, after we've gotten rid of them, Haftar's saying, oh, let me come and rid you all of terrorism. Where was he when the real terrorist threat was here? So it's quite interesting that the way the word is used and sort of thrown around, and actually Haftar's using it now against those, the people who were involved in fighting IS. And so there's been sort of this ongoing fight ever since Derna freed itself from the grasps of IS in 2015.
Hey, let me tell you about the sponsors of this show. First of all, Mike Swanson. He is the author of the great book, The War State, about the permanence of America's World War II military empire through the Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy administrations, the rise of the new right military-industrial complex after World War II, The War State by Mike Swanson, and also get his great investment advice to protect your financial future there at WallStreetWindow.com. He has a great understanding of what the hell is going on in these financial markets. WallStreetWindow.com. Unless I know he'll tell you, you got to have at least some of your savings. You must know. Some of your savings, however much it is, you got to have metals. And so what you do is you go to Roberts and Roberts Brokerage, Inc., gold, silver, platinum, palladium. They have a very small brokerage fee in order to process for you and get you the very best deal. And if you buy with Bitcoin, there's no premium at all for your purchases of gold, silver, platinum, palladium. So check those guys out. Roberts and Roberts Brokerage, Inc. at rrbi.co. You ever play baseball? rrbi.co. And as I mentioned, Zencash is a great new digital currency. It's also an encrypted method of internet messaging and document transfer and all kinds of things for your business, for your secret conspiracies. Zencash.com. Check that out at zensystem.io. You can read all about how it works, every last detail, of course, at zensystem.io. And then there's this book about how to run your technology business like a libertarian. It's called No Dev, No Ops, No IT. And each of those is one word, three words, you know, get it? Yeah. No Dev, No Ops, No IT. It's by Hussein Badakhshani, and it's about how to run your business right in a libertarian way. LibertyStickers.com. I guess Rick didn't like the great new website, so we'll have to wait. Someday we'll get a new website. There's still a lot of good stickers on there, but we've got a lot of good art that's not up there yet. I don't know, man. LibertyStickers.com. That's the new slogan. And Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom. If you like learning things, I'll get a commission if you sign up by way of the link on my website. And listen, if you want a new, and the reason my website is down is my own broken servers, but if you want a new good-looking website like the one I do have when it's up and running at scotthorton.org, then check out expanddesigns.com/scott, expanddesigns.com/scott, and you will save $500 on your new website. All right, and so, well, and I asked you about the fighting, so you could talk about that, and then is there any basis for a resolution here where Haftar could stop short of overthrowing this new self-appointed or whatever appointed city council here and compromise and stop the fighting short of victory?
Yeah. I mean, I've, you know, speaking to analysts and sort of residents and people from inside Derna and people from inside Libya and other parts as well. It's, you know, and obviously Haftar has just come back from being hospitalized in France. There was, you know, rumors of his ill health stopping him from being able to be an effective leader of the LNA. And in fact, there were even rumors of his death. And then he comes back and sort of one of the first things he does is turns his attention back to Derna. And I think it is to an extent in order to sort of show that, yes, I'm, you know, back and I'm in full swing and I have control. But actually, I think Derna not being under his control does pose a threat to this idea that we were talking about earlier, that the splitting of Libya into, you know, three separate entities. And it does pose a threat, because if you have a pocket within your territories that is actually not controlled by you, that is not on your side, or at least is not effectively being silenced, then it does pose a threat. And I think that, coupled with this need to reassert himself as this, you know, very strong military figure, is what has sort of driven this newfound attention on Derna. But actually, I what I would say is, as well, is that just going back to the residents are not, this is not, it's not new to them. And they're actually not changing their minds at all, from what I can see. Obviously, there are some people who support the Libyan National Army and say, yes, you know, we do support Haftar. But they're a minority. And also, even if they support Haftar, I don't think any of them, you know, are happy with the way that Haftar has been sort of barging in and killing whoever and whatever comes in his way. We saw just this week in the most recent attack, 6 civilians killed at least, you know, over 14 injured, 27 killed in total, at least one child injured, and the images and things that, you know, we've seen coming out of Derna are actually too horrific to even share, in my opinion. They're really horrible sort of scenes of destruction. And not to forget that this is a city that has been under siege by the LNA for nearly 2 years now. So not only are they being bombarded sort of by airstrikes and land attacks, but they're also struggling to feed themselves, to feed their children. And, you know, the hospitals are struggling with supplies. There's not enough oxygen. You know, we've heard of cases of children that have, like, that stillbirths and things like that, because there wasn't enough medication in the hospitals, and there wasn't enough supplies and things like that. So it's quite a bleak sort of situation that they're in. Even if there weren't these airstrikes, and to add insult to injury, almost, you have the majority of these people are actually fasting at the moment, because it's the month of Ramadan, which is the month where Muslims abstain from eating and drinking from from dawn to sunset. And so, you know, the whole situation is, it's quite worrying to see that even now in this month, things are continuing, and the assault has been ongoing ever since earlier this week.
And you cite Human Rights Watch saying that civilian casualties are high. Is there a specific estimate there?
In the most recent attack, it's at least six civilians killed. But I mean, again, last year we had, it wasn't even the LNA that was attacking Derna, it was Egyptian planes were attacking mm-hmm. Derna. The LNA has, you know, launched sporadic, random airstrikes on the city here and there. They've tightened their siege since last year. Since November last year, they you know, tightened the siege. Aid workers can't get in. Aid that's being delivered is often being sent back once it reaches their checkpoints. So, I mean, the numbers are just going to continue to rise unless something changes. I mean, if the siege continues and the attacks continue, then people are either going to die from the air attacks, or, you know, from the war, or they're going to die from a malnutrition or a lack of medical supplies. And that's the reality, I suppose, on the ground at the moment.
Mm-hmm. All right. And now, it does go without saying, of course, except that the New York Times had a piece about Benghazi recently where they talked about there are a lot of problems in Benghazi, where they didn't even mention the fact that America and its allies had launched a war there in 2011. And you and I hadn't brought that up because, of course, it does go without saying and everybody already knows that. But then again, we better make sure. I don't want to make it sound like, oh, yeah, they've got some problems in Libya, and not point out America's responsibility for the thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's again, it's a very complicated situation. And I think this is part of the reason that Libya stays out of, you know, discussions a lot, is because it's actually very difficult to understand what's going on. There are so many factors. There are so many factions. There's so much happening there that it's very difficult to get like a full picture. And it's very easy to hear sort of overgeneralizations and things like that. But yes, in 2011, the US and, you know, NATO were involved in Libya. You know, and to be perfectly honest, actually, had they not been involved, we would see a very different picture now, and we'd probably be seeing even greater numbers of Libyans killed by Gaddafi in 2011. But I think yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, when they attacked Benghazi specifically, Gaddafi had a huge convoy on its way with the intention to flatten the place, you know? So, and that convoy didn't reach because of...
Well, but he hadn't flattened any of the other towns, right? He hadn't flattened any of the other towns that he'd taken back from the rebel forces. Why was he going to flatten all of Benghazi?
I think that's debatable. I mean, Gaddafi did... there was a lot of destruction, a lot of innocent civilians killed, captured, tortured, and all the rest of it. But again, I mean, things to say.
I'm not saying there wasn't a lot of collateral damage and that kind of thing, but he wasn't going in and inflicting massive punishment on the civilian populations of all the towns where the rebels had been fighting.
They were defeating the rebels
in brutal ways, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But then,
and civilians, not just people who were fighting him. But again, I think what's important now is
the accusation at the time was that he was going to kill everyone in Benghazi, and that's sort of the way you put it there, flatten the place.
I think,
makes it
yeah,
sound like he was going to kill everybody just for being in Benghazi, and that doesn't really make sense, does it?
I mean, that's what he said. That's what his intention was by sending all of this that convoy. He said, when I'm done with it, essentially, there won't be any Benghazi left. Mm. I think Libyans are tired of sort of being the punching bag, whether it's from the international intervention, whether it's from within, you know, the country itself, from whether it's from sort of wherever it's come from. Libyans have had it very bad from all directions since 2011. I mean, it's coming up to, you know, it's 7 years on, and things, I'm not sure if people in the country are even seeing any improvements at all. And you have places like Derna that have been, you know, children are starving, and mothers are not being able to, you know, look after their health when they're carrying children or after they give birth and things like that, because of a siege that is being enforced on this city by someone that you know, that says he's going to take full control of the east of the country. He fully intends to take part in elections that are supposed to be happening this year. And I mean, again, we have talk of elections and on the one hand, and on the other hand, we have civilians being choked essentially in their own city. And it's a very interesting picture to paint when you have the Government of National Accord that was sort of thrown into the country without any Libyans involved in the choosing of this government. You know, it was just thrown into the country, as you said earlier, came in by sea, just here you go, here's your government. And on the other side of the country, we have this almost Sisi wannabe who is, you know, doing all of this stuff in Derna and other places. Mm-hmm.
And you as
know,
you say, so with international support from the French, America's allies, and especially, but also Egypt and UAE. And of course,
and Russia.
Oh, and Russia, too. That's interesting. The CIA's former guy backed by Putin now. And so, but now I wonder who, and of course, I mean, I think it goes without saying, but this too, but we should mention that basically any international intervention is only going to make matters worse and distort power factions' amounts of power on the ground in ways that perpetuate conflict rather than solving it, obviously. But I wonder about who backs the government in Tripoli, which countries are on their side?
Well, I mean, you know, technically it is the only internationally recognized government in the country, technically, which means that sort of all relations and like state issues and stuff, they are the recognized government. But actually, Haftar has shown and proven that he doesn't need to be part of the government for him to carry on with what he's doing. Unless he's sort of stopped, he will just carry on with what he's doing. He knows what he wants to achieve. He wants more power. He wants more control, and he's willing to sacrifice civilians, to sacrifice his image, I guess, as well to some extent, in order to achieve that.
Mm-hmm. And now is Belhaj still a leading member of the government in Tripoli?
I mean, he's not part of the government of national accord, but he's got a part of, you know, politics. But no,
it's just an interesting story because he was at one point kidnapped and renditioned and tortured by the Americans and by the Brits and then is suing in British court. They have something like a rule of law in Britain, much more than in the US.
He actually just recently received an apology, didn't he, from the British government.
That's interesting. But he was
just recently, I think last week, he just received an apology. So an acknowledgement of how he was treated and their responsibility.
But he was actually associated with Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan back when and that kind of thing. So they had something on him. It's just they completely abused his human rights anyway, you know. So I guess I'm sorry. I know you told me you had to go and now we're over time. I wanted to ask you about the South, but you're late. So listen, thank you very much for coming on the show. Thank you very much, Nadine. Appreciate it.
That's all right. Thank you. My pleasure.
All right, you guys, that's Nadine Dahan, and she is writing here at Middle East Eye. The article is Haftar forces launch fresh attack on besieged Libyan city of Derna. All right, so you guys know the deal. Foolserrand.us for the book, scotthorton.org, and youtube.com/scotthortonshow for all the interviews, 4,500 of them now going back to 2003 for you there. Read what I want you to read at antiwar.com and at libertarianinstitute.org and follow me on Twitter @ScottHortonShow. Thanks.